In the new book, Behind the Gates of Gomorrah, A Year with the Criminally Insane, Dr. Steven Seeger provides a look inside a forensic mental hospital, the facilities that house the criminally insane. Unit C, where Seeger was assigned at Napa State, is reserved for the so-called bad actors, the mass murderers, sexual predators, school shooters, and real-life Hannibal Lecters of the world, and they are all at Napa State because they have all successfully employed the insanity defense. Again, the title of the book is Behind the Gates of Gomorrah, A Year with the Criminally Insane. We welcome Dr. Steven Seeger to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Very nice to have you here. What brought you to think about this and to want to spend this year and to spend this time investigating both this place and these people?
Well, it was interesting. I took the job there without knowing very much what it was like. And when I walked onto the unit, as I say in the book, someone had got their head bashed with a chair. And I was so stunned at how violent this place was that I thought maybe that was just a bad day, but it just kept going on day after day. And I thought, I asked people, I said, do you know what goes on at Napa State? And the answers were, isn't that where foster kids are kept, or don't old people go there? No one had any idea what went on behind those walls. So I thought, after a year, this is something people really need to know about, because it's not just a phenomenon at Napa. There are hospitals like this all across the country with exactly the same things going on. There's hospitals not far from you, exactly, like at Mid-Hudson in New York and Kirby and Central New York, CYNPC, which I looked up, which all have exactly the same problems of incredible violence. At Napa, we have 3,000 assaults per year, which they'll admit to, and it may be as high as 10,000. And we only have 1,200 patients.
So the way that this facility is structured is more like a hospital than a prison. The staff and the patients are not separated. The patients live in double rooms, similar to a hospital setting. The thing that blew me away was that there are no guards.
Yeah, my wife said the same thing, and so does everyone. It is 1,200 of the most violent criminals who also have a mental illness in Northern California, and it is a hospital just like any other hospital. I have five tiny nurses, and we walk around the halls, we bump shoulders, and it's just incredibly dangerous and incredibly violent, and we've had the court actually say, you should have guards, but it just has never happened. And people are stunned to find that out. Imagine if you were walking down the hall at NPR Radio and Hannibal Lecter walked by.
Okay, well, that's too easy to make a joke. But I will... So let me just ask the question of why was this, from its inception, acceptable? I mean, it just seems to be logical to say we are going to put people who are violent, who are inherently violent, they are criminally insane, and that not only should we put them in a hospital setting, but we should protect them from the staff and from each other.
That's the obvious question. And what I'm really advocating for, because most of the assaults are on my patients. I'm a physician, and I care about my patients, and it's really hard to get better and get well when you're getting the crap beat out of you regularly. Why it was set up this way, I think it's a residue from the anti-psychiatry movement, which was that, you know, psychiatric medications are bad, and we can do therapy, and we'll get in there and talk to these people. And, boy, it just did not work out. And so we're kind of stuck with this old system that just doesn't work, and people are getting killed. We just had someone have all their teeth kicked out, a young Asian nurse. And my point is, I'm not advocating for me. I'm well paid. I could leave tomorrow. But my staff, which is mainly female, and my patients, who can't leave, are just getting the crap beat out of them all the time.
So you look like at a facility. I've spent some time at St. Elizabeth's in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a similar facility and setup?
Yeah, except that I think in California, this was built in the 1950s, it looks more like a junior college campus. It's green, it's verdant, it has campus-like buildings, But once you get inside the buildings, it's exactly like St. Elizabeth. It's exactly like Mid-Hudson. It's exactly like Bridgewater State in Massachusetts. It's the criminally insane people who are not only criminals but have a mental illness, and nobody's there except the staff. There's no guards. There's no wall. There's just a wall to keep them in, and keep everybody else out. Apparently, also, all the information out. It's impossible to get information about these places. I really found it difficult. We've had TV people try and get in. The BBC tried to get in. They just stonewalled it and said no. So this is the only way I can get information out to people. And say, look, they're 50... All 50 states have hospitals like this. This is what's going on in your state, just like mine. And this is the only voice these people have.
So within those facilities, there is security. I mean, there in the sense of there are bars, there are... There's no locks?
If you went into a community hospital, the door is locked, but that's all. The rooms aren't locked. There's no bars. There's bars on my office window. So if I have an earthquake, during the earthquake, which we just had, I couldn't get out. But there's not a police presence. We have a police presence, but they're generally outside the fence. And if someone gets attacked, they're there in 5-10 minutes, maybe. But you can get a lot of the crud beat out of you in 5-10 minutes. But yeah, it's not what you think. It's not guards. It's not bars. There's only one lock, and that's the main unit door.
Is this something where we're looking at facilities that are older and are out of date, or are we looking at a philosophy that needs to be changed?
That's really hitting it right on the head. It's not the building. It's not the problem with the building. We could fix the problem easily. It's a philosophy. They're trying to make a hospital and a prison at the same time, and it just isn't working out. In other words, it's just the worst of both worlds. We give bad medical care because of the forensic setting, because people are scared. They're always giving the crap beat out of them. The doctors and staff are wonderful. We don't give bad care in the sense that we don't know what we're doing. But it's always dangerous. People are always scared. And they don't get good forensic services because it's a hospital. So there's a move somewhat to, like, give psychiatric care in a prison setting, which is more along the lines of what we need. It's a philosophy change. There's nothing wrong with the physical structure of the hospitals that we work at.
So they are considered to be patients and not inmates, even though they were found not guilty by the reason of insanity.
That's exactly right. Because the if you think about it, they have been found not guilty. There are no charges pending. What they got. They got sent for treatment instead of any kind of prison time. So they have been, that's what not guilty by reason of insanity means. They're not guilty. So they are treated like patients, which sets up that whole mindset that you brought up. And that's why it's so difficult, is you're trying to deliver medical care when you're worried about getting the crap beat out of you.
But just the term criminally insane indicates that these are people with mental issues who have committed criminal acts.
Oh yeah, they've anything you've read about in the paper, like you say, John Hinckley. Right. I have people on my unit who've committed all those same kind of crimes, and I was as stunned as you. Believe me, I don't have the answer to this. I'm just telling you that I was stunned and I was surprised, and I don't think anyone else knows this, and that's why shows like this are so important. Because you're willing to spend some time and talk about this when most people won't. And it's just people just need to know that behind those, this is what happens behind those fences. And take example of Microsoft. If there were 1,200 employees at Microsoft and they had 10,000 assaults a year, what would happen? CNN would be there. They'd have cameras. It would be a big uproar. But it's happening right around you. It's happening right around me, and nothing's being done.
So let me, and I'm not being flip in asking this, but or at least not intending to be, but you are a board-certified psychiatrist. You are a former professor of psychiatry at UCLA's School of Medicine. Wouldn't you look at this as just another example of how crummy, we deal with mental health issues in this country. This is one facet of a very broken system.
Yes, that's again a good point. You seem to have a really good sense for this. But someone has to stop and say, look, this can be fixed. I'm an advocate for my patients. They're sick. They're ill and they're being poorly treated. Yes, the homeless mentally ill are being poorly treated as well. But someone has to just say, look, here's what's happening. Now you have the information. What are you going to do about it? Yes, it is a broken system, and these people are suffering, and their families are suffering. A lot of people are suffering because of this. And don't forget the victims. Everyone that I have in that hospital has lost a family member or a relative or multiple relatives to this violence. And I'm just saying something needs to be done. And I don't have the answer. I'm simply trying to point out the problem and saying, you know what? This isn't right.
Dr. Steven Seeger is the author of Behind the Gates of Gomorrah, A Year with the Criminally Insane. When you consider that you are sitting in a room with the patient, did you feel that aside from the violence, aside from the issues at hand, you were able or would be able in another, maybe that's the better question, do you feel that in another setting that you would be able to help / even cure or allow them to live a more productive life, the patient, are we just monitoring at this point?
No. Actually, that's, again, a good question. Most of my patients do get better in spite of everything. They could get much better, much faster, if they weren't being beat up. Also, they start to accumulate broken bones. They start to accumulate head injuries, which really makes their medical progress, slows it down. But yeah, no, we give good medical care there. The staff is excellent. And most of my patients get better, which I was really surprised. I started off my medical life as an internist, and then I was an ER physician. And as a psychiatrist, most of my patients get better at the same rate they did when I was an internist. The problem is they keep getting beat up, and they keep getting raped, and they keep having all these horrible things happen to them. So, yes, I can make them better, and the system could be way better, but they're the ones suffering with this all this chaos and stuff that goes on.
Part of the problem, and I found this interesting in the book, is that when you look at the mental illness that would lead one to commit murder or even mass murder, that there is an element, the one through line here, in most cases, is paranoia.
Yes, and especially for the mass murders. What I put in the book called Why They Shoot is the one thing common to most mass murderers is they have some form of paranoid schizophrenia or some form of a paranoid disorder. Because the street schizophrenics, the people with the hats on, the aluminum hats, they're not organized enough to collect an arsenal. Bipolar people are generally the victims of violence. The police usually shoot them. But paranoid people are withdrawn. They don't lose IQ points as other schizophrenics do. They're smart. They think the world's out to get them, and they figure, you know what, I'm going to get you first. So the other common problem is they think, well, if these people could only get into treatment, well, they've all been offered treatment. There's plenty of treatment available, but they all refuse it. They refuse medications. They refuse therapy. They sit at home and stew and collect guns, and eventually they go to a school and shoot everybody.
And I guess the point I was ultimately getting to, so then you put those people in this setting, and it doesn't seem to be a proper setting, well, for anyone, but especially for a person who is also dealing with paranoia.
Well, I can treat the paranoia if I can just get hold of them. The problem is the courts have, over the years, said you can refuse treatment. If you can believe this, and this is true, I swear, I get people referred to me from the court as criminally insane, and they can refuse the treatment. They can just sit in the hospital. So the problem is treatment's available. They don't want it. The court says they can refuse it, and most of them do. So unless I can get a court order to treat them, And if I can, the paranoia goes away. The problem is, as soon as they're discharged from the hospital, the very first thing they do is stop their medicines and go right back to being paranoid.
So let me challenge you on one thing, and that is that you have said a few times in the course of our conversation that you don't believe, you know, you don't have the answers, but you're outlining the problem. I believe it's people like you and people that work within that system that probably do have the answers.
Well, I don't want to be perceived as some... I want to just be helpful. I want to be an advocate. I want people, if you have an answer, we need to listen. We want to hear from you if you think something's better. I have my set of answers, right. And I wasn't supposed to say that, you know, I know the answer to all these problems. But I want to generate some thought, and I want to generate some dialogue. If people have an answer or they think they have an answer, we'd love to hear about it, and we'd love to maybe get a dialogue going nationally, which is this is helping to do, that maybe people are tired of this. They're tired of mass shootings. And if they are, one of the problems is if you read in the newspaper after mass shooting, nobody talks to each other. They talk at each other. And I think we should start a dialogue. This is the problem as I see it. This is my view on what would be helpful. What's your view?
And we have two issues going here. One is how the patient winds up in a facility like the one you were at. And the second question being, what can we do when they're there to treat them and to keep both them and the staff safe? It seems in that regard, the most logical and common sense answer is that even if you are labeled criminally insane and there is still a criminal act involved, that there should be a level of security of that patient. When you say they can refuse treatment, can they leave on their own accord?
No. And what's interesting is the original problem with this first iteration of insane asylums was people were being warehoused, which is they were being held without treatment. Now, 30, 40 years later, the court insists that we warehouse them. They say we're remanding you for treatment, but the patients can refuse it. So they sit in the hospital being warehoused. They're locked in, and they refuse treatment.
Okay, so that is essentially a prison. They are being imprisoned, but they are not being treated.
That's correct. And we would love to treat them, but we have been commanded by the court not to treat them.
And
which makes no sense.
But so both sides of that system are broken then, in the sense of the medical side of the treatment, and then also of not a penalty, but at least protection.
Yeah, it seems like everything has kind of focused, come to a head to make things bad. It's an unsafe situation. People are there untreated, and they're allowed to go untreated when treatment is available, and they're the most dangerous ones. There's a long court process involved to get them treated, but by the time I can start that process to finish it, they've assaulted 5 or 10 more people. So it's just a screwy system that's kind of evolved over time, and I wanted in the book to point this out, say, look, this is what all these court things lead to, and this is what all this stuff, when you read about the insanity defense, this is what happens to these people and to the people who care for them.
My understanding is that we have seen the number of cases of those who can successfully use the insanity defense decrease. Is that true?
Well, I think it's lower than you would think, but there are in the United States about, I think it's successfully used less than 25% of the time, but there are about 50,000 to 200,000 people currently in the United States. These numbers are incredibly hard to get. Those are the two ranges I could find. There are 200,000 to 50,000 people who are still held in facilities just like Napa facing these exact same problems, and that's a fair number of people.
And just so I also have this correct, in Napa, you have people who have committed these acts, but then you are also mixing it with a population of people with serious mental issues who have not committed criminal acts.
It's about 10% of our patients have been there long enough that they were there before the fence went up. And we also serve as the county mental health center, mental health facility. So, yes, we have people who are there on conservatorships. We have elderly people mixed in with these people. Then people in the book, they run them around in their wheelchairs. They knock them out of their wheelchairs. We have demented people. We have people with a wide range of mental problems. And they're mixed in with these heavy-duty, mentally ill criminals. And they're not segregated. I know on my unit, I was very surprised. We had three people in wheelchairs and guys just knocking the crap out of them.
Showing up every day to Unit C, was that hard for you?
It still is. I still work there.
You still work there?
I was there yesterday. It is difficult, and I talked to a number of physicians after the book came out. It's difficult every single day. It's sort of like being a cop, or I'm not a military person, and I'm not saying it's anything like that. Every single step I take during the day, I'm cautious. I look both ways. I make sure no one's lurking outside my office before I leave. When I walk on the unit, I scan the hallway. So every single moment of my day, I'm on alert. And unless you're like that, when you let down your guard, that's when the attacks happen. All the doctors on my unit have all been assaulted, have bones broken because they got casual for a moment. So it's a really difficult place to work.
Do you find that the staff that you get, I mean, we make this hospital comparison, but are you hiring people who serve both purposes, that are able to have some, and I don't mean this physically, but have some heft in being able to deal with some of these problems different than they would in a normal hospital setting?
No, most of my nurses, in California, most of my nurses are Filipino and about 5 feet tall. Most of my nurses, it's a tiny group. I'm not a large man. We don't get big bulky staff. There's no more orderlies. We don't have cops on the unit. I have, you know, when a 6'3", 250-pound guy goes off, I've got a group of Filipino nurses. I've got some psychologists. That's the problem.
How do you keep them?
Interesting, about half of them go off on disability and we don't see them again. We keep them because they need the job. It pays well. And frankly, people like, you get to like your patients. I like my patients and I want them well. I want them to get well. I wish them well. I still work there. I'd like these problems to be solved for them. And I think the nurses feel the same way.
The name of the book is Behind the Gates of Gomorrah, A Year with the Criminally Insane. The book is published by Gallery Books. Dr. Steven Seeger, I thank you very much for being with us this morning. Thank you so much.
Oh, I appreciate the time, and my patients appreciate the time.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much. Okay. Again, the title of the book, Behind the Gates of Gomorrah, A Year with the Criminally Insane. It's published by Gallery Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.